Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Man, she was a Manchurian candidate
as that bloke's mother. That was like 100 years ago.
She's great.
She's fantastic. There was a great piece. I found it in the Daily Mail in 2012.
She's titled, 92, Tony.
The most dangerous place on Earth is revealed to be the fictional setting for TV series Murder, she wrote that.
Because everybody gets murdered.
The murder rate in Cabot Cove was like one out of every three residents.
Why are you going? Where are we going, Cabot
Cove? Worse than Chicago.
So. A small town in Maine. Everyone's being killed.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, we're live at Chatter. We have a nice breakfast crowd today. We're open at 7 o'clock in the morning when the show is on for breakfast. Everybody here, let me explain what happens around here. First of all, Ginny McManus is here. Gary Braun is here. Nigel is here. Michael Kornheiser, trial not over. Has to go back
That's
Monday.
That's not possible.
Going into its ninth day Monday.
No!
A trial where that
possible.
Judge said day and a half, right?
Yes, I'm not allowed to talk about the specifics
Understand.
Of the case. But yes, we are on a temporary delay. We are now using multiple alternates. One woman looked like she was about to give birth in the jury room. I mean, I'm very tired.
You must have
at this
a good
point.
Boss. A good boss who says,
"Well, this is my civic duty."
Right.
That's
so,
right. It is.
Frankly, it doesn't matter who my employer would be.
And sometimes the wheels of justice move very slowly.
They grind.
Do you know what makes this worse? As I get home yesterday afternoon, there is a piece of mail waiting for me on the kitchen counter. From the D.C. Superior Court system, which is
You're
my
up.
Paycheck.
Oh,
my paycheck for 5 days of service.
$20.
For $20.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which would have tasted a lot better had I not been planning to go back this coming Monday.
That's right. It's a very, very long trip. For people who wonder, what is it like to come to Chatter? Well, you get gifts.
The best.
Yes.
Daryl Lee, which is a licorice company in Australia.
Yes.
All right, in New South Wales, Australia, sends us... Hi, Tony. We keep hearing how much you love our licorice on your show. And by the way, they spell it L-I-Q-U-O-R-I-C-E. Not like Americans spell
not with
licorice.
A C, right?
No. And
That's
we thought
Nigel's
we'd send you a
spelling.
Little thank yes. you gift. Please enjoy the enclosed bags. Have a great day, mate. And so everybody here
Crikey.
Gets
that's
licorice.
That's not licorice.
And you could get something if you come here and spend American money. You could get something. All right.
There's also a beautiful book for Bootsy, which is Ralph Squirrels Plays Golf. It's really hard for a kid to say, but it's beautifully illustrated. This is, I think, from Mr. Squirrel himself.
Oh, it's signed Mr. Squirrel?
Ralph Squires, which could
Squires.
Be a pen name.
Ralph
yeah,
Squirrels.
For squirrels. All right.
Old Hickory Press.
That's very nice. Presents for Bootsy are accepted.
So somebody had suggested as we promote your Super Bowl party
right,
here at Chatter.
That's what I want to get to, yeah.
Okay, so someone had suggested, I'm trying to find it here on Twitter so
Super
I can
Bowl
give them credit.
Super Bowl party is Sunday here. Nigel will be here.
Yes.
I will be here before the game.
Yeah, we'll be about.
We're open next Monday. We're closed Tuesday and Wednesday.
Right, now, so because you'll be closed redoing the men's bathroom, someone was saying you should auction off for charity at the Super Bowl party. The ability to take sledgehammer swipes at the men's bathroom as it gets demolished.
That is a great idea that we're not going to do.
I thought it was an
But that
idea.
Is a great
I
idea.
I think there are some liability issues
there. We're not giving out sledgehammers.
That might extend the renovation timeline.
Yeah, no, we're not. But it is a great idea.
Yeah.
So that gets you up to date. Super Bowl is here. Please come.
Nigel hosting that Super Bowl
and
party.
And I have spoken with the chef. The menu sounds great.
Yeah, the special
great
menu.
Bar food.
Special menu.
Good snacks.
Two things before we get into the show itself. One, and again, this is troubling for me. This morning, do you remember, I tried to watch the Super Blue Blood Red Moon.
That's right.
And I told you that by 6:33 in the morning... It had dipped below where I could see it from my house.
6:45 a was prime viewing time, but you would have had to have been at elevation because the moon was so low.
Today
in the sky.
It's 7:10. I walk out of my house. The moon is absolutely visible everywhere I walk. The moon moves.
Yes,
this is my whole
unconscionable.
Point. The moon moves.
Speaking of Groundhog Day, I feel like I'm in it.
Yes.
Does it? Am I wrong on this? The moon's a big, bright moon beginning to wane, but it's everywhere.
I was up early.
It moves.
It was beautiful.
I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm saying people tell me, no, it doesn't. No, you're wrong. No, the moon moves. Now, it's possible we move, too. But something happens. There's movement. That's my whole point. Now,
Can we get Neil deGrasse Tyson type on here? Oh, yeah, that's huge news. There it is.
Atomic lighter, yes. It is fascinating lightning technology.
Light it.
Yes. So,
does everybody here have an atomic lighter?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know,
Stand back. We've got an atomic lighter up here.
So it's a
chargeable
thing.
It's not a special ops lighter. It's an atomic lighter.
Yes, there's a USB port so you can charge this like a phone. Yeah. There's a switch at the bottom. When you do that, there's a little button. And I don't know if you can all see this. It's not a very big flame.
Yes.
But it is a lightning flame.
A purple X.
I don't get it.
Can you see it?
It almost looks like a taser.
And it works.
I don't get it.
It works.
Yeah, I lit Gary Williams' note to you on fire earlier, and it did work.
Gary gave me a bottle of rock.
You can't light a Sangamore's charcoal briquette spirit rock.
I think you can if it's doused in something flammable.
Yes, it probably would light, but your hand would be very close to what might be about to explode.
It's a very, very small flame.
Right, like a centimeter by a centimeter.
Yes.
And it's not
really
a flame.
Like when
it's
you
like
light
a
match and you stick the match
in a flame.
Yeah, to light paper to light your fireplace.
And it also gives off no heat. Like you can get your fingers very close to it.
It sort of looks like something that Dr. Frankenstein would have in his laboratory.
Right.
You know? Bzzz. But it's great. I was lighting stuff on fire.
The
all
lid
day yesterday.
Looks like it would get in the way of your ability to light something of a certain size.
I don't get this thing. It's like a chia pet.
You can't cook a hot dog on it. You can't. There's no real flame.
And that is the acid
But it's atomic. It's atomic. So we're very happy.
Yes. Very excited.
All right, let me begin with some sports and just let me proclaim Michael Wilbon is a genius. When John Wall went out, and it was estimated that the Wizards would lose him for 20 games, Wilbon said, they're going to go 13-7. I said, they'll be lucky to go 8-12. Their first two games are against really good teams, teams that were above them in the relative playoff standings, both West and East. Oklahoma City and Toronto, and the Wizards beat them both without John Wall. Which leads to the inevitable speculation that somebody is going to say, what do we need John Wall for? Put Thomas Satoransky back there and trade John Wall for a big-time 3 or 4 who can score. Not Carmelo Anthony now, but Carmelo Anthony of 6 years ago. Because we don't need John Wall. The other inevitable conclusion supplied by Gary Braun is...
I just think it serves as confirmation that maybe, in fact, they do hate him.
Yeah.
And the one thing that could galvanize them. Now, this would be, I think, an easier theory to sell had they won 96-92 and not 122-119. But in the first couple of games, they seem to play better defense. They undoubtedly shared. They've got 97 assists, Tony, in those three games. 97 assists in three games without him. Completely balanced scoring. 8 guys in double figures last night. All 5 starters and 3 dudes off the bench. They are playing better without him. They are playing better without
him. How do we account for that? John Wall is, even if you don't...
He's great.
Yeah, he's
great. I don't know. I mean...
Just as a casual observer of that team, not like you guys are, it always seems to me that John Wall gets the ball and gets out ahead of everybody.
He does.
And everybody else then has to catch up with
him. This has been my criticism for 5 years.
Slows the game.
Yeah.
I'm not one of the cheerleader columnists who believe that John Wall is the face of God. Right, and that you can't be critical of them, and they're lost without him, and anybody who says anything bad about John Wall is a communist. I'm not one of those cheerleaders who gets paid to do that. No, I'm not.
Well,
I look at the actual results, and I go, well, he's great in game 6. Well, you know.
So is it, would it be an oversimplification
I think he's a really great player.
Phenomenal player. But,
yeah.
But would it be unfair to suggest that when he is there... It's sort of recess.
It's his ball.
Versus without him, they are running offense, hence all these. I mean, you look at last night, Beal and Porter, 6 assists each. Satoransky, 4. Gortat, 3. Markieff Morris, 2. Big Shot Scott, 2. Jan Mahimi, 2. I mean, they are like really, really moving the ball and distributing the ball in a way you do not see when
everybody's touching the ball and with enough time to do something.
Right.
Which is not the case.
Now, there
with John
is also
Moore.
Sometimes when you lose a big player. There is, in the immediate aftermath of that, there's a boost. I mean, they could still end up
Cleveland won 2 in a row without Kevin Love.
Right.
He's not their best player, but he's an all-star.
But they all hate him, too.
We should revisit the conversation in a week, maybe.
Yeah.
So couldn't a coach look at this and say, what works here without John Wall? And when John Wall gets healthy and comes back,
try to persuade
him into the game plan.
Try to persuade him. Here, what you shouldn't do is trade him. even though I'm agitating for that. No, that's crazy. You don't do that. But yes, you can say, you have to analyze, why are we better without him? It's not because he's not a great player.
Right.
We need to change some of the things we do. I will stay with basketball.
I think, by the way, they had lost 7 in a row at home to the Raptors prior to last night.
Yeah. And they beat them. Yeah. And by the way, and also Oklahoma City and Toronto came in with long win streaks.
Yeah.
Like 7 or 8 games in both cases. The other NBA story that I wanted to get to, Russell Westbrook. At the end of the Denver-Oklahoma City game last night, Denver hit a shot with 1.4 seconds to go. They did it on an out-of-bounds play. Russell Westbrook sort of got lost on the out-of-bounds play. It wasn't his fault, but he comes flying out to try to block this shot. Doesn't block the shot. The shot
goes in, three-pointer.
Right. Denver wins the game. In the immediate aftermath of that, in the celebration, there is not really a court storming, but there's a lot of physical activity around the periphery of the court. And one fan, and why are all these fans chesty? They always
are. This dude was not afraid. He was like Omar. This dude did not scare.
He was right in Westbrook's face.
Yeah.
And barking
just screaming,
at him.
Woo!
Yeah, barking at him. And Westbrook put his hands on the guy's right shoulder.
One, right? One or two?
One hand on the guy's shoulder. And initiated contact. Did not push him to the ground.
No.
Just did not
sort of shoved him out of the way.
Fist. Did not do anything where you would say there's a potentially dangerous situation here, but made contact. Right, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Made contact.
Shoved him.
And the league has said, we're going to look into this. My feeling about this is Russell Westbrook behaved better than most people. And a fan should not, I know you can't prevent, you can't get security out because security cannot anticipate a 1.4 second shot made at that point. So I don't blame them. These things happen. I thought Westbrook's behavior was reasonable and not terrible. And I thought the fan, from some players, would have gotten worse. From players in all sports, would have gotten worse. By the way, if it was football, we know what would have happened. The guy would have been knocked out.
Mike Curtis style.
What do you think? What does the league do?
I don't know what the league will do. And full disclosure, I'm a big Russell Westbrook fan. I thought he behaved almost perfectly. I don't think a guy as fiery as Russell Westbrook that you're going to get in his face
totally,
screaming.
Totally fueled by anger,
Five seconds after giving up a game-winning shot and not get a little bit of something. So I thought he showed tremendous restraint.
I did too.
You cannot anticipate guys storming the court. But you don't have to sell seats that are actually on the basketball court, which
the NBA
does.
Well, you sell them because you're paying $1,500.
Of course.
That little fat guy was probably paying $15.
I'll tell you, that guy, he was ready to go.
He was ready to go.
Yeah, that guy was ready to go. Do you think he'll be suspended for that? That would be terrible.
He shouldn't be.
I did not see it, but I do believe that, athletes, celebrities, whatever, should be allowed a certain perimeter.
Yes.
Of course.
And if you invade that perimeter.
Of course.
You know.
When a Broadway show is over, do people jump on the stage?
No.
And they don't do that.
Plus,
don't
the fat do that. Guy probably had 50,000 drinks at that courtside.
Never know. Yeah. Michael, did you see it?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Nigel?
I did not see that. No, I'm
sorry. Fantastic. Then we're done with this segment. As we got nowhere to go. When we come back, Mark Maskey will join us. Give Michael a read. It's great to hear his voice again. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
What's great about this read is that they give you a theme before they actually give you the copy. So I'll read that line and see if you can figure out what it is.
Okay.
Think inside the box. Make a big impression this Valentine's Day.
Sherry's Berries.
Boom!
Oh,
nice! This
well
is the Sherry's Berries.
Touch them all. Ooh,
what
Sherry's
a shot. Berries.
So who's your Valentine, and what do you love most about her? If you can't answer that first question definitively, I would recommend that you pause and figure that out.
Wait, so the assumption is then, the large assumption is that this is being, males are being targeted with this ad.
Well, it says, who's your Valentine? We really
well, what's
not.
The second? What's the second line?
And what do you love most about them?
Well, no, I thought you said her.
I did a real-time
because that's
edit.
Grammatically
oh,
correct.
Customizing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But, so that reflects your prejudice.
No, that's...
You're, what?
Well, plus, there are more than two gender identities these days.
All right.
Who's
so,
like 81.
Yeah. Yes. Who's your Valentine, and what do you love most about it?
It is good. It's good.
A gift from Sherry's Berries is the perfect way to make a big impression this Valentine's Day. Go ahead and think inside the box this Valentine's Day. Your berries will arrive in Sherry's Berries signature gift box with a beautiful ribbon. I can add that you can save that ribbon and use it for subsequent holidays.
Yeah.
No gift wrap required. Right now, listeners to the Tony Kornheiser Show can send Sherry's Berries or any of their decadent gourmet gifts to their Valentine and save 20% off on gifts over $29 with promo code TKPOD. That's slightly different, so promo code TKPOD. I'd ask that you close your eyes and think of a strawberry. When you do so, the strawberry that you are going to imagine is going to have a certain color, a certain texture, and really that's what you get when you open up your Sherry's Berries box. They taste great, they look great, and they take care of all that hard thinking for you. So you have fresh, juicy strawberries dipped in a milk, dark, and white chocolatey goodness, then topped with rich chocolate chips, chopped nuts, and signature swizzles. So you can choose the delivery date, and it's guaranteed. Customer satisfaction is always their number one priority, or your money back. There's only one way to get 20% off an unforgivable gift over $29 from Sherry's Berries. Visit berries.com. Please spell out the word berries, berries.com. Don't confuse that with berries for Luga. Today, yes. And enter promo code TKPOD at checkout. That's berries.com. Code TKPOD.
It's a great read.
I like the dark chocolate. If anybody's thinking about...
Yeah, it's a great read.
Dark chocolate for me.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This song is sent in by Dan Reichel, Tamarack, Florida. Tamarack, Florida, near and dear to my heart because my parents lived in Tamarack, Florida. The song is titled A Long Way From Home, and Dan writes, the artist is my cousin the Emperor, who is actually my brother the musician, and his name is Jason Reichel, who in addition to being a singer-songwriter, moonlights as a professor of history at Brooklyn College. Additional songs that will remind you of Johnny Cash can be found at mycousintheemperor.bandcamp.com, and Dan Reichel is an outreach pastor at the Community Christian Church in Tamarack, which is going to be, I know, near the corner of University and Commercial, because that's the center of Tamarack, and that's where I used to go to get food, at the corner of University and Commercial. Mark Maskey is in Minnesota and joins us now. Jeannie and I were in Minnesota the last time the Super Bowl was played there in 1992. Maskey, were you covering?
I was not covering. I was covering baseball in 1992.
I thought so.
So you were not with us in Minneapolis.
I was not with you, Eddie. You took the bandwagon to Minneapolis, didn't you? I was not on the
indeed,
bandwagon.
Indeed. It was me and Jeannie and Norman Chan. And we were there, but I thought maybe you were covering.
And you took turns driving, I assume.
No. We had professional drivers. So you were doing the O's?
I was doing the Orioles, yes. Orioles in 1992. Well, I assume in 1992 probably we're not that good, but I don't remember exactly.
So, for people that don't know, Maskey is DeMatha and UVA and was a territorial draft pick of the Washington Post at UVA and had more bylines at UVA than most people had in their entire careers. And didn't what was your first full-time job with the Post?
It was baseball. I did baseball, which was the Orioles, which was... trying to get a baseball team back to Washington. And, of course, back then with George, so we worked year-round. So George, in the off-season then, would have me cover Georgetown basketball. So a couple of years of baseball off-seasons, I covered Georgetown basketball with Big John coaching, the first John Thompson coaching.
George was remarkable in this particular regard. He had absolutely no regard for your personal life. So if you were scheduled...
he didn't know that existed.
No, if you were scheduled...
Which for most of us was true.
Yeah, if you were scheduled... That's why he always hired young, aggressive, good, talented people, because they did not have a personal life at that point. So if you were covering, for example, a game in Miami, let's say the Redskins were going to Miami, George would say something like, you know, I'd really like to pick up a feature on Alabama football. It's sort of on the way. Why don't you go there first? And then on the way back, why don't you stop in Green Bay?
Yes.
Because it's sort of on the way home. And nobody said no.
You're in Dallas, stop in Seattle on the way back.
Did that all the time. Yeah. And nobody ever said no. Nobody ever did. No. All right, let me get to this game. I would think, I would think that the only news, true news, unless you're going to tell me that there's a flu epidemic in the locker rooms, that the only true news is that Gronkowski is going to be able to play, which is the great benefit of the bye week for the Patriots. Is there something else I'm missing? And what do you think Gronkowski can give them?
You know, I mean, I think there is some degree of thickness going through the Eagles. We have some of that, but I don't assume it's anything that's going to keep, you know, anybody from playing. But yes, you're right. The only thing that's really happened this week is Gronkowski, you know, comes and says he's been cleared to play. And I think, you know, we were anticipating that with the way things were headed. But again, that's different now. It's a different situation because that's a decision that's out of the hands of the team. The team doesn't make that decision. The player doesn't make that decision. That is made by an independent doctor. So it's still significant that happened. We there was no way of knowing for sure that would happen. I think we thought it would happen, but it is significant that it happened. He's a major difference maker for them. I mean, he's the guy that changes everything you have to do on defense. He's a guy that you have to find someone to match up with him. We'll see if it will be Malcolm Jenkins. We'll see who it will be on the Eagles. But he's the one guy that no defense really can handle well. No defense really has the one guy who's big enough, fast enough, strong enough, all of those things to stay with him. He's the guy that Brady is going to be looking for. So, yes, that was the one significant thing that happened this week. And it will be, you know, sort of the thing that in part determines how this game goes. Can the Eagles deal with him or can they not?
I would think that because there's always a possibility if he gets hit hard that he could be out again, I would think you'd go to him as soon as you could. You'd get everything out of him that you could, that your game plan would be, let's find 87 as quickly as we can. Or do you think it would go a different way?
You know, the funny thing is, as big, strong, and fast as Gronkowski is, when you watch him play and you watch their game, he takes more harder hits than almost anybody you'll ever see.
Yes, he does.
He gets hit hard a lot. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is your premise going into the game. But here's what then happens. The Eagles know that. That's the one guy they say, okay, that's the guy they're going to go to. So if they know that and they adjust their defense in such a way, you know, they're giving him extra attention, they have help on him, maybe even double-team a tight end, which is not commonly done, but maybe you're doing it. Then, you know, obviously that's opening things up on the outside. Maybe that gives Brady a chance to throw a deep ball to Cooks. Maybe that opens things up more underneath for the running backs, and they love to do that. So he can be a significant factor of the game without being the guy that Brady goes to often. If the Eagles make certain adjustments that open things up for other guys,
right,
and that helps the Patriots, that's significant as well. Just his presence on the field changes the game, whether Brady's going to him or not.
Here's something. I wonder, you're there, and it's football, and you know everybody there, and you do this year after year, and it's your job. Okay. But the average person who comes into the Super Bowl, I'm wondering if you get any sense this year that with the week layoff and with sort of a downer football season and ratings down a little bit and so many people hurt and out for such great lengths of time, that this year, and a recent poll that was announced today that so many people don't want their kids to play, is there a lack of interest in this game? I sort of feel like the momentum has been lost on this season, and I wonder if there's any sense of that in Minneapolis.
You know, it's hard to get any sense of anything in Minneapolis because you cannot actually step outside.
The
temperature this morning is -7. You know, yesterday I woke up and they were saying wind chills of -25 to -35.
Hope your jacket works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, you know, they have the media out in Bloomington, so we're not in downtown Minneapolis. I am at a hotel that's literally, you walk out the front door, you cross one street, then you cross the parking lot, and you go into the Mall of the America, and strange enough, that's where everything is. The media center is in the Mall of the America. Both of the teams are staying in hotels right by, so you just walk through the Mall of the America. That's where the teams are. That's where the press conferences are. You know, the radio row is set up in a food court, so it's a very strange. But yesterday, I have to admit that I took the media shuttle from my hotel to the media center, which is literally across the street, across the parking lot, because it was so cold. So you can't be outside. You can't get a sense of that. I mean, obviously it would have been a lot different atmosphere if the Vikings had been here. That would have made for a dynamic we've never seen in a Super Bowl before. You would get a greater sense of the excitement. But, yeah, I think you get a sense of the diminished excitement here. But I'm wondering if that's just because of sort of the particular strangeness of this Super Bowl, to be in a place where it is so cold, to be in a place where things, in terms of where the media is, you're not downtown, you're out in the suburb, you're kind of removed from things. But yeah, it will be interesting to see what the television rating is for this game. Now, you have the Patriots in it, and that helps because people want to watch the Patriots.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about.
They hate the Patriots.
I want,
Love the Patriots or they hate the Patriots. So that, I think, sort of saved the interest level in this Super Bowl. But yeah, in terms of the larger overall picture with everything that happened in this NFL season, yeah, you wonder if the NFL is on a decline, and if it is on a decline, how quick and precipitous that is. Absolutely, you have to wonder.
So you don't think there's Patriots fatigue among people, that they're just going to say, I don't care anymore, I'm sick of them, they're so great, I don't care?
I don't think we've seen that yet. I mean, maybe it's just possible, but I don't think we've seen it yet, because there's always something happening with them. You know, you have a spy gate, and then you have the flight gate, and then this year you have, you know, is it the end for Belichick, Brady, and Kraft together? So there always seems to be something with them that continues to fuel the interest, and I think we still see that. I still think we see sort of the same amount of passion by which people either love them or despise them. So, but again, it'll be very interesting to see what that viewership number. It'll be huge because it's the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it always is.
But will it be huge by Super Bowl standards? Will the bar continue to go up a little bit all the time like we usually have seen? Or now are we simply in the era where it's going to decline? And the interesting thing about the NFL is, you know, TV is declining in general. TV viewership is down.
Yes, it is.
NFL viewership, TV viewership of the NFL is down, but the NFL remains clearly the best thing on television. And we saw them still get a very good TV deal with Fox for the Thursday night game. So while all of those sort of metrics are down, it's all still very strong. And the NFL is sort of still the king of the sports heap, but we are seeing some slippage. We are seeing some decline in interest. It's just a matter to me of how big that slippage will be and how quickly it will continue to accelerate, if it continues to accelerate at all.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this, and it's local, and it's Kirk Cousins. Where should he go?
Where should he go? He should go to Denver, because that's a place where, you know, you're with John Elway. You obviously need a quarterback. They're only a few seasons removed from being a Super Bowl team with Peyton Manning, who wasn't still Peyton Manning at that point.
So that's right.
But you still have a very good defense there. You have Von Miller out there already lobbying publicly for him to come. I think that's probably the best setup, the best situation for it. And I'll put one disclaimer there. If the Jaguars are able to solve the Blake Bortles issue, and that becomes a problem for them because, you know, he just had wrist surgery and he's guaranteed $19 million if he can't pass the physical on March 14th. But if they sort of find their way out of that somehow and sort of can clear the decks of Blake Bortles for Kirk Cousins to be there, then you've got a team that has absolutely everything but a quarterback. And you have a team that can be extremely good with Kirk Cousins. So to me, it's Denver is the best place for him, unless Jacksonville can solve the Blake Bortles issue and find a way to get Kirk Cousins there. Then Jacksonville is probably the best for him. And that's assuming that, you know, the money is going to be huge wherever he goes.
Yeah, he'll get money.
It obviously will be. Right.
All right, stay indoors.
Is it possible that the Redskins would sign him as insurance in case
Alex Smith gets hurt. For Alex Smith.
That's probably the way to go. Yeah.
Stay indoors. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Maskey.
Thank you, Tony.
Mark Maskey, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news, and Jeff Ma will join us and make his final pick of the season. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a band called Civic Duty, and they write, "We are Civic Duty. We are a young D.C.-based alternative rock band just starting out and searching for gigs. We're inspired by 60s, 70s, and 90s era rock and roll, but our main influences include the Beatles, Mac DeMarco, I don't know, and Nirvana. We were wondering if perhaps one of the songs below could be played on the show. We're building a fan base. Any help would be appreciated. If there's a spot anytime, or if you have any questions, just mail us back here at civicdutyband@gmail.com. I have a question. Is a dog's mouth cleaner than a human's mouth?
But that's a good question.
My standard question. Which song
what
is
kind
this?
Of bear
this is called My Love.
And Michael, if people like Civic Duty want to send in their original music, how do they do it?
But before that, Civic Duty, is this your real name or are you trolling me?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm in the middle of my Civic Duty.
Right.
You want to increase your band's profile? Why don't you go sit on a jury for a couple weeks? If you have original music you want to send in, please send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Jeff Ma joins us now for his last pick of the season. A very successful season, I think, 22-22-2.
Good numbers.
Yeah.
2-2-2-2-2.
It's a complete palindrome situation. And there's one game left. I don't know what your odds are. We've been thinking it was 4.5. I don't know what number you have looked at, and obviously that's important when you make a pick. But, Jeff, as you look at the game and you look at these teams that you know very well, where are you leaning?
Can I make one comment on something that you guys talked about earlier in the week?
Oh, sure, sure.
I do listen to the podcast.
Well, and he, and his own podcast is Bet the Process.
Yes.
Jeff's podcast. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. We actually this week, Rufus Peabody, the imaginary person that I do the podcast with, is known as the king of props, of all those prop bets, all those things that you don't seem to like, the silly bets. He doesn't do the silly ones. He does more of the ones that make sense, like will there be a roughing the passer penalty or will there be a safety and those types of things.
Yeah, well, that's better than will Pink be airborne at any time during the anthem.
Yeah, Angela Lansbury.
The silly ones they just really have for marketing. They don't actually take very much money on any of those bets. And a lot of those, like the actual results of them, can be very subjective. So they're sort of, I agree with you, Tony, they're silly and they're just there for marketing. But he actually bets quite a bit of money on these. There was an article that was written in the Washington Post about him. Where they said he bet around $600,000 total on all of these props, and he does very well on that as a professional bettor. But anyways, our podcast this week is all about those prop bets. So, but what I wanted to talk
everybody should listen to it because you can still bet.
Yes,
that game's not till Sunday.
The windows open.
Parimutuel windows are open still.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What I wanted to talk about was the reason that we have a bye now every week. Do you know why this happened or where this is traced back to?
No, I don't understand it because, Jeff, I feel that this week in particular, I have lost all momentum for this game. I don't really care about it. So, why?
Do you know what the NFL is about more than anything else?
Betting.
Money.
Yeah.
Money, right? This is a money league. And when 9/11 happened, they had to cancel a week of the season, which essentially made them shift the regular season back a week. And then they found if they actually had the bye that the Super Bowl would fall within sweeps week or within the sweeps time, and it would make the Super Bowl even more valuable.
Oh. Yeah. All right. I didn't realize that. So, in other words, so February is a sweeps month.
Yes. So now all the time they want to make sure that the Super Bowl falls within the sweeps time, and therefore it's more valuable.
Yes, because it's the highest rated show of the year every year by a lot. Wow. Yeah. No, you're right. Okay. Makes sense. Now I know.
So in terms of this game, I think there's a lot of interesting things to think about. One, there's sort of this narrative that the Patriots play close Super Bowls. And if you look at the line of this game, it opened at some people say 6.5, some people say 5.5. It's bet all the way down as low as 4. So I actually think the value is on the Patriots in this game because I think that, you know, this has been bet down. I think one of the interesting commentaries on this game that I've heard from Bill Barnwell at ESPN was that the way that people beat the Eagles is that they play fast, because their defensive line is very good, but they also like to rotate people in and out. And what I see is the Patriots playing a lot of no huddle to try to keep them from being able to substitute their defensive line. So I think this game will be a little bit higher scoring than people believe, and I do like the Patriots. Now, one of the things that I would advise, and so this might be a little bit of cheating in the overall grand scheme of sort of my betting record, is there's a phenomenon in the NFL Super Bowl where the people who bet the underdog like to bet them on the money line. They like to have this lottery ticket. So in other words, instead of betting the Eagles plus 4.5, they're going to want to bet the Eagles plus the 190. So in other words, they can risk $100 to win 190. And the people that bet the Patriots are going to tend to bet them with the points, so minus the 4.5. And what ends up happening is that the Patriots money line, actually betting on the Patriots to win the game without the points, becomes value because these two things become out of whack. This is not quite happening so far the Super Bowl, as the Patriots money line is now kind of back up to around the minus 200 level. But what I would tell your listeners is if they can get the Patriots around minus 180 with the point spread around 4.5, that is really where the value is, to bet on the Patriots to win with the money line.
That's fabulous. That's
great.
That really is, because I mean that's yeah, I would never, I'm not a gambler and I don't really understand that stuff, but I think that that's probably very good. Do you like the, I like the explanation that you like the Patriots because you think that Belichick will go faster and faster and faster, promoting more points, and the more points there are, the easier it is to have a greater disparity in the points, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I also, you know, think generally that the Patriots are equipped to play that kind of a game. That's something they've done quite a bit in their their history. Like, they actually learned it, the idea of playing tempo, from the Eagles. It's something that Bill Belichick took away from Chip Kelly when Chip Kelly was there, this idea of running. If you see, like, he talks about it, you know, way back 3-4 years ago when the Patriots started to play with tempo, they wanted to run a lot of plays. And they do believe that their conditioning is better than other teams. So they believe that the more plays they run, the better they will be. But again, like, what I would add as a more advanced better, what I would advise versus if you want to bet the Patriots is not to bet the point spread, but to actually bet the money line, bet on them to win the game without the points and give up the odds, because my guess is on game day, that will be where the value is. But I would tell you also to wait to bet this until game day or close to the time of the game.
Thank you so much, Jeff. And I'm going to advise people to listen to the podcast, Bet the Process, because this will be explained in better detail, right? And it's good.
We do talk about it this week on the podcast.
Good. Thank you, Jeff. I wish you luck in this. I want to see you over 500. And I'd like you to come back and do this again next year if it's not too much of a burden.
It's not a burden.
And
at
he'll
all.
He'll slip you a 5 for your trouble too, Jeff.
Yeah. Poor kid doesn't have much money. You know, here's 50.
How did we go from $50 to $5? Yeah.
Well, deflation.
The restaurant's not doing as well as I hoped. So, thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Cody.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls.
Cool analysis.
That's very good. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. Very specific and very good. Nigel has news.
Yes, I do. And I will start off. Well, I'll start off with the fact that Punxsutawney Phil. This is his day, Groundhog Day.
Yep.
And if you're interested as to whether he saw his shadow or not,
no,
he did.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
Oh, you're not interested.
No.
Okay. Do you know what? We missed a date in history yesterday.
What? February 1?
February 1, 2017 was a big day, particularly in Washington, D.C.
What happened?
That was the day that the bobcat Ollie
returned
to the zoo.
Oh, yeah.
Or as we guessed,
the replacement
was
cat.
An entirely different
That's
bobcat
right. That's
that
right.
they named Ollie.
That's right.
So I just wanted to make sure that we brought That's that right. to everyone's attention.
So Phil seeing his shadow means 6 more weeks of
six
winter,
more
right?
weeks, to finish, yes.
The day before was a very important day in football. January 31st, 1-31. Oh. That was Hugh Jackson Day, because that's his record.
Oh, nice.
1-31. And how he is still coaching is beyond my comprehension.
It is strange. By the way, I didn't realize that there's all sorts of Groundhog Day-like festivities in your country.
Yeah.
Including here in Washington, there's Potomac Phil, a stuffed groundhog.
I don't know what that is.
In New York, there's Staten Island Chuck.
Well, Bonnie and I were looking through the catalog of costumes yesterday.
Oh.
I would wear a groundhog costume today. The only costume she could get was like $750. And Eric said, no, we're not doing that.
Not
and then she
it.
Said, well, would you dress as a beaver? We could get one cheaper. I said, no, no.
It's not a beaver.
It's groundhog. No.
Mr. Tony, Blake Griffin made his debut with the Detroit Pistons.
And damn good.
Yeah, 24 points and 10 rebounds and 5 assists.
Yeah.
Other than coming out in the second half without his jersey on.
That's right, he had his undershirt on.
Yeah, it seemed to go fairly well.
He's very excited,
Pistons.
He said. Good for him. I like Blake Griffin. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
Wilbon doesn't like him. I do.
In college basketball, we'll go to the women's side of things. This UConn team seems to be pretty good.
This is, look, so I'm going through the dial. I'm going through the dial, and I land on the fact that UConn is playing South Carolina.
Right,
and
he's named seventh in the country, right? Something like that.
Yeah, but they're the defending champions, South Carolina.
Beat UConn last year, right?
No, somebody else took out UConn.
And no, not in the tournament. I thought they beat them in the regular season.
I don't know.
Could be wrong.
I don't know. Okay. It's 53-24 at the half at South Carolina. It's UConn. They're admirable. They'll go play anybody,
anywhere,
anytime, anywhere, and they'll beat your brains out. And that's all I wanted to say.
Apparently, they have won 132 of the past 133 games. The streak broken only by the upset in overtime to Mississippi State semifinals last year.
Mississippi State, very good this year again.
Yes.
Very, very good.
This is an interesting story that you brought to my attention this morning. A bloke by the name of Mark Appel, who was the former overall number one pick in baseball, taken by the Astros in 2013. He is now stepping away from baseball without ever making it to the big leagues. I guess his career got sidetracked by injuries and just lost opportunities, and now he is stepping away. I think he's only the third number one pick overall to not make it to the big
leagues. I'm going to say to people out there who are always saying, you know, I want to get into sports writing. Do you have any advice? Here's my advice. Find this guy and write a story that will win you a Pulitzer Prize. Because I don't know anything about this guy. This story is going to be great. If you get him to tell you everything you need, if you go back, he's the overall number one pick in baseball, walking away in a little amount of time.
Right.
Not giving it everything that a lot of people would give it. Not hanging on. I'm betting, aren't you, Jeannie? This is a great story.
Yeah, I mean, if he were a football player, it makes more sense. But a baseball player, there's a big question mark in my head.
Yeah.
Had a great.
And by the way, when you do this, the first guy you talk to before you talk to this kid is Billy Beane.
Yeah.
You go talk to Billy Beane, who I think was the overall one or two pick, and knew he wasn't good enough to play, and ended up being the genius GM.
So I think the only other name that comes to mind in terms of a number one pick that did make, was it Brian Chapman, was it the guy?
Don't know.
For the Yankees, remember that pitcher?
Yeah, but he made it to the bigs.
Brian Taylor, I'm sorry.
He made it to the bigs. He just didn't pan out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Guy signed a $6.35 million signing bonus after an outstanding senior year at Stanford.
High school. Oh, so college.
Yeah.
So he's probably smart.
But which also makes it interesting is that, of course, the second pick in 2013 was Chris Bryant.
Yeah. How's he doing?
But he made MVP
once. By the way, this is a quote from Apple in 2014. After his ERA was 9.74 in 12 starts, he said, "I go out and pitch, and it's the same thing every time. I can't get an out. Walk, hit, then I'm out of the game. What just happened? Now it's like I have 4 days before I get my hopes up again, get excited, build that confidence, not caring what happened in the past, and then the same thing happens again."
Okay.
And I guess after one start, it says in this copy on Yahoo.com, he screamed himself hoarse and threw baseballs at a wall, leaving it with a giant hole.
This is a story worth going after.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
Don't tell me, I want to be on TV like you. No, go get this story.
Let me give kudos to Nige and correct myself. Unless he makes a return and gets to the majors, he will join Brian Taylor, 1991 of the Yankees, and Steve Chilcott, 1966 of the Mets, is the only number one overall pick to
Taylor
never make
had
the bigs.
He was involved in like a ballroom fight involving his brother or something like that.
Got
and
like
his shoulder, his shoulder was just completely
now,
thrown out.
Nigel, before we went on the air, I know you had an interview regarding the reinvestigation of the Natalie Wood drowning.
Yes, Natalie Wood is back in the news.
This was 30 years ago.
But didn't you talk to somebody about this?
Well, yes, I did. And hold on, I'll just give the details of the story and I'll bring in our special guest here. But Robert Wagner apparently is now being listed as a person of interest in death.
They think, someone thinks that Robert Wagner killed his former wife.
Well, he's a person of interest.
Now, there was only three other people on that boat.
They ought to be people of interest.
Yeah. Yes, it was Robert
Persons
Wagner, Natalie
interest.
Wood, the skipper, and Christopher Walken, who joins us right now. So, Chris, come on over here. Right, as I said before, Tony, wonderful to see you again.
It's good to see you.
That was a night full of drinking Sambuca and shouting, and I was up in the forward berth reading a Hardy Boys novel.
Yes,
I had
no idea what
was going on, so I'm baffled by the whole thing.
So do you think there's any possibility that RJ, as his close friends like to call him, threw Natalie Wood over the side?
No, I can't think that at all. I think Bobby is a great kid, and this is just a tragic accident that happened to Nat. She was a wonderful star, and I was in a movie with her at the time, Brainstorm, a terrible movie, but she was great. So, no, Bobby had nothing to do with
that. That leaves the skipper.
Yeah. Skipper.
Well, wasn't it the skipper who came out a couple years ago on like one of these ridiculous morning shows? And said, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying. He sort of did a Stormy Daniels type thing. Yeah. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Right. I'll have a chat with the skipper and Gilligan later on today. But it's just wonderful to be here. And by the way, Chatter is a fantastic place
to be. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Glad you feel that way, Chris.
How we get out of here, we will have, what do we have when we return?
We have Old Guy?
Old Guy Radio, yes. Old Guy Radio when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's February, so we're going to continue with the Valentine's Day themed reads.
Good.
So they give you a few intro options. Here's one. They want me to discuss how Valentine's Day creeps up on us and we panic. I tend to panic when most things creep up on me. And with the shifting...
The fog creeps in on little cat's feet.
With the shifting day of Valentine's Day. Yes, sometimes it's easy to forget. And
what do you mean the shifting day? It's February 14th all the time, isn't it?
Well, it could be on
a
Monday.
Not on a leap year,
Oh, okay. Oh, you mean the day of the week?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, because the number is the number.
Right.
Okay, it's a number. Make sure.
So it's easy to
Things could change.
Think of this a few weeks out, but then as you get closer and closer, you keep putting this off, and Books can help take care of that hassle. So don't hit the Valentine's Day panic button. This would be a good time for the...
duck
and cover. Okay, I
duck and cover.
Valentine's Day is approaching.
Take cover and wait further instructions.
Well, here are the further instructions. Don't get suckered by online $19.99 specials that end up costing $60. Don't go home with produce department flowers that smell oddly like green onions. I find it interesting that they go heavy on the negative
recruiting.
Don't.
Negative
don't.
Recruiting. Don't right. go. Don't go to Alabama. Saban's going to leave.
So that tells your Valentine you didn't care enough to send flowers from the Books. That's short for bouquets, and they're booking awesome.
Yes, they are.
They are booking awesome. That's right. Fun to say.
Yeah.
Books flowers are freshly cut from Books farms and delivered straight to your Valentine. They even have farms located on the side of a volcano that produce flowers so gorgeous, your Valentine will post pics and brag about you. I don't really need her to post pics and brag about me. I would really just like her to enjoy the flowers.
That's so sweet.
Until Bootsy eats the flowers.
No, do not let Bootsy eat the flowers.
And because Books don't sit in warehouses, they last weeks on your table, not days. And Books cut out the middlemen, so you'll get amazingly fresh flowers at an amazing price and amazing free weekday delivery. Show your Valentine how much you care. Send artisan design flowers from The Books. Order today and get an extra 15% off when you enter Tony. That's Books.com and use code Tony to save 15% at Books.com.
Lovely read.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Sonny and Cher, and the reason we're playing this is because today is Groundhog Day. And if you see that movie,
soon
as 559 turns into 600, boom, there's Sonny and Cher. In terms, I'm not even going to do critical commentary on the song. I love the song.
It's great.
I Got You. But the movie is one of the most surprisingly wonderful movies.
Holds up, too.
It just really it's holds so up. Good, right?
It really is.
It's a fun movie.
It's great. I was just having this conversation with somebody last night. They're like, oh, it just looks stupid. And I was like, no, it's a great movie.
It's really good. It's Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, who nobody knew. And Chris Elliott.
Chris
Elliott's wonderful, you know, as the photographer.
And I forget who the bloke is that plays Ned Ryerson, but he's just terrific.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Ned Ryerson.
Bang.
Yeah.
In terms of the song, I didn't realize that Sonny Bono was a songwriter and producer.
Absolutely,
for Phil
in the Brill Building.
Phil Spector.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to write his own song, wrote this song in his basement when he was married to Cher.
Cheryl
in
the back of a napkin in 5 minutes.
And this was like a response song to It Ain't Me, Babe, which was, you know...
That's a Dylan song.
Yeah, Dylan, brooding Dylan song. And he wanted this to write something that was much more positive.
It is
and
positive.
So, yeah, so he said, I'm just coming up with this. I Got You, Babe. And that's sort of how the origin of the song came about.
Cher, by the way, in town this weekend.
In
at
Washington?
National Harbor performing it. Now, I saw a picture of her in the weekend
section. You couldn't get me to National Harbor, even if you provided the transportation. No. I'm not going
so
there.
So do you know... I'm looking it up now as I speak. I think we may have had this conversation before. You know how many days... I mean, it was never explicitly said how many days Bill Murray
Well, he learned
was
how to play the piano.
Right.
Yes. So and a bunch of languages and stuff. 5 or 6 months.
Be an ice sculptor with a
No, no.
It's, chainsaw?
It's like something like, yeah, something like several thousand days. I'm going to have to.
Really?
Yeah.
It's years?
Yes. Yes.
Interpretation.
Like, well, they never make that clear.
They never do that.
It's a lovely little movie.
It's fun.
I mean, they don't. Comedies are not like that, are not made now. All comedies are raunchy now.
Yes.
All comedies are based on how often can Melissa McCarthy curse in a 5 second, or Rose Byrne, or whoever, all the women that circulate in these movies. And those movies, I'm not saying they're not funny,
right,
but they're not as much fun as Groundhog Day.
So according to Wikipedia, obviously a lot of speculation about how long he was there. But
yeah,
in 2014, the website What Culture combined various time duration assumptions and estimated that Phil spent a total of 12,395 days, just under 34 years, reliving Groundhog Day.
That seems like too much.
That's a little bit much.
That's a lot of Sonny and Cher, isn't it? That's a lot of Ned Ryerson.
I think I would have come around to my conclusions a little more quickly.
We're going to talk about, amongst ourselves, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl now. And when I say we're going to talk about the Super Bowl, you can all make picks. I don't really care. What I want to talk about is with Miss McManus. Because the last time this Super Bowl was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was January of 1992.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
And the game was in January, not February.
Mm-hmm. In the Metrodome, which I don't think exists anymore. And we drove out there in an RV because that was the bandwagon year. Jeannie and I and Norman Chad masquerading as Man About Town, Chip Muldoon.
Yes.
And if I recall correctly, when we left from the old post building, Jeannie was drunk.
I wasn't drunk.
What?
I had been out late.
You said you were drunk.
And for the first time in my life, I was late because there'd been this big party for one of my girlfriends, and it was a Caribbean-themed party. So I drank
Malibu.
Too many of those little fruit drinks with umbrellas.
Yeah.
And I got home late and packed my suitcase while I was 8 sheets to the wind.
Oh, that's always a bad idea.
And then I woke up that morning, I thought, I better repack. It was a very good thing that I did because there were some crazy things in that suitcase.
So
I was not drunk, but I was mightily hungover.
Well, let me tell people.
Had to get on a bus.
Right. So now we're not on a real bus. We're on in an RV, and in the back of the RV is a bed where you could lay down.
That kind of bed.
It was a bedroom.
A bedroom, but it was unlike a bus that I later learned about with Monday Night Football. There was no particular stability to this RV. So when it drove at 60 miles an hour, the back of it is swaying. Jeannie gets back there and comes running back into the cab of the car because you were going to throw up.
It was just like, throwing you around?
It was like an amusement park ride where it was kind of fishtailing back and forth. I'm like, no. And also I realized then I need to be vertical.
Did you guys have a driver or was someone?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We had two guys.
We had two guys.
Two guys.
Very nice guys.
Very nice.
Who basically thought we were Martians, because we were having conversations among the three of us that made no sense to them.
Right. So we drove and we drove and we drove.
Kind of
like
the
show. And we got all the way to, was in Indiana?
Indiana,
the first time. Where there is a sign on the motel welcoming us.
Yes, welcome bandwagon.
Welcome bandwagon.
Oh, that's awesome.
And this is not a hotel.
No.
This is a motel. This is a motel.
It was one of those ones that has this lovely lobby, and then you walk past the lobby, and you're basically in prison.
Right.
Did you enter your room from the outside?
No.
Street-level entrance?
No, but there were
But it was
doors.
A very cold...
I'm assuming no bathrobes?
No bathroom situation.
Bathrobes.
No.
This
was the 1990s.
The shower gift, and because now, when you we've been driving 10 hours, 11, 12 hours, whatever it is. And when we get there, and I must say, I for those of you who
any
don't.
Any drinking on the bus?
Not really.
No. Okay.
A little. Not really.
But you have to remember, for those of you who don't know Norman Chad, he is a viciously sarcastic human being. Viciously sarcastic.
You had to be on your best
to
keep up with
him. And we love Norman Chad. Yes. And Norman Chad is, he wants to attack whoever is in front of him in that moment. So we get there, and there is a sign, welcome bandwagon. This is thrilling for
me. Like on the marquee.
Yes.
In the middle of the night, we arrive.
Do I want to say Elkhart, Indiana?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right? And I'm thrilled by this. So I think now we are going to get the red carpet treatment of our lives. I walk into my room. On the bed is literally, here is my gift, a frozen apple. It is frozen solid. I could throw it through three glass panes. It's frozen. And that's, and I go, that's it?
Tony,
that's
me.
It?
Tony called me in my room and said, you have to come see this. And there it was.
It's a frozen apple.
At least you know it was fresh.
It's frozen apple. So that's true. So the next day, I don't. We probably ate dinner. We left the next day. The next day, were we in another motel or did we
arrive? No, you had to have gotten there the
next day. No, we got there. But remember, we went that night to some place and it was like a scene out of Hoosiers. There had just been a big Indiana basketball game, and all the
families nobody knew who
were
we were.
No, it was great.
No, it was not great. It's disturbing.
No, it was fine. Well,
it was the bandwagon.
Tony, 1991. We're on the bandwagon. But 1991, 92.
By the way, there is on the RV, there is a huge decal.
It says the bandwagon.
Yes.
But no, we got to Minneapolis the next night, but we stopped somewhere between Elkhart and Minneapolis.
And sadly, not a Golden Corral.
Sadly. We stopped to pee, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah.
And there was a convention. Do you remember the convention?
Psychics. I said, who's going to win the game? You're psychics. It was a psychic convention.
The psychic said,
mostly women. Weird.
The psychic said, it begins with a B. And it was the Buffalo Bills. And we're like, oh, my God, the psychics have picked the Bills.
They were wrong.
Yes, they were.
The psychics were wrong. And we did all, I mean, we were writing. I was writing every
bandwagon
day.
It could have been.
Bandwagon columns every day. And the psychic convention was tremendous fodder for us.
It was great.
And they were stepped in it.
I'm going to tell you that they were, what I recall is they were mostly women and weird-looking.
Weird.
Weirdly dressed.
Yeah.
Long, weird.
Kind of like the Cleveland Park psychotherapist with the
with the clunky jewelry and
moves
and stuff
like that. That's part of the costume.
Yeah.
So we get there, and it's, sure, it's cold. It's Minneapolis. But I recall us having a great time.
We did. We had a great
particularly at the
time.
St. Paul Winter Carnival.
Yes.
The ice sculpting.
And you loved that hotel, right? I forget what the hotel was.
No, I don't remember the hotels. In Monday Night Football, I was at the Graves Hotel, which was very weird.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was one of the big hotels. Maybe a Marriott.
But there was also, what surprised me, and I remember this distinctly, there was a Morton's.
That's right.
And I didn't know that Morton's was all over the country. I didn't know it had extended.
Oh, you knew it was out of Chicago.
But I didn't know it had extended to Minneapolis.
Okay.
And one of the nights that we were there, I was told they were going to be there, about five or six guys I went to high school with and had dinner with them. And that was very lovely for me to see them because I hadn't seen them in, 40 years, whatever it was.
I think that first night we had dinner at Morton's with Lupica and Litwin and you and me and Norman.
We had a wonderful, wonderful time, but Jeannie and Norman did not want to take the RV back.
No.
No, absolutely.
Fly?
No.
Was,
yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were
first
done.
Plane, first
when
plane
we
out of there.
Got there, they were done with the RV. But it was it
so
was.
So you came back alone on the RV?
On train.
Did,
I came back
train.
On a train.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I came back on a train.
So how did the RV get back?
Well, the guys owned it.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were from there.
They were.
They came down to get us. I don't remember their names. It's in all of the columns.
Right.
They were very, very nice.
Very nice.
But Jeannie's right that they were not quite understanding how we lived our lives.
Well, there was a certain
we were
there
always
was a sort of
laughing.
There was sort of a bandwagon patois by that time that didn't make sense to an outsider.
The bandwagon columns, I'm not going to defend them as being fabulously well written, but I will say that I never had more joy in anything I did at the Washington Post than that season, which came out of nowhere, and the way we were able to do the columns each week, bringing in names of people who it is a in its way it's a precursor of this podcast of the connectivity of people because everybody wanted to be involved with the bandwagon, and God bless Donnie Graham who had bumper stickers made up.
Yep.
Thousands and thousands
shoved them in the Sunday
of bumper
paper.
Stickers and handkerchiefs.
And George Solomon, who just let you run.
I still have them.
Run
I still
roughshod.
Have 100. I still have 100. Yes, I was not writing sports columns.
Right.
I was writing, community theater columns, which is essentially what it was. Making, trashing Gibbs constantly. Killing Gibbs. Gibbs never understood.
The doomsday choir.
Yeah, he never really understood what I was doing. He knew it was vaguely subversive, but he wasn't sure I was making fun of him.
And I remember when the Redskins won that game, Mitch Albom turned to you and said, "So you're going to write a bandwagon column?"
Yeah, that's like, what I do, Mitch. Exactly. That's what I do. Why don't you go off and find your old professor and write a book that nobody will read and see if it sells 18 million copies?
The bandwagon was driven by Scott Steinbeck and Harry Landenberg.
Scott
okay.
And Harry.
Nice. Okay.
They
all
were
right.
Good sports.
So we had just a wonderful, wonderful time. And you know, every once in a while, people will remember, and if the Redskins win one game in a row, they'll say, when are you going to? And I say, leave me alone. Right. That was a moment in time.
Right.
It was great fun. I've not gone back and reread any of the columns, but I know they were fun. We didn't, like when you edit, we enjoyed every minute.
And somebody would send us chicken wings, and somebody would send us cookies.
And there'd be Richard Thompson did the caricatures every single week.
No atomic lighters.
The
though.
Hogs were just totally on board.
Loved it.
Russ Grimm, totally
the
on
flea,
board.
The Flea, Russ Grimm, Mark Addicks, who's now a surgeon.
Physician, right? Orthopedic?
He's an orthopedic surgeon out of Harvard Medical School. Who knew? Who knew?
Well, lest you think it wasn't 100 years ago, I was a junior or senior in college at the time. And, of course, grew up reading your column. And my brother would cut – this just sounds so funny now – he would cut them like with scissors out of the newspaper
and send them.
Put them in an envelope with a stamp and send them up so I could read them.
There was no internet. There was no way to get.
I mean,
all
I guess
of those
I was in suburban New York. I could have found a Washington Post.
But
I guess.
I
but
do
it's just,
still
it's
have
funny.
Bumper stickers, and I do still have a few handkerchiefs.
Yeah, me too.
And it was something.
Yeah, like handkerchief. It was like a terrible towel.
I was in the moment of it, thrilled by it. And I've never done anything before or since.
So
the only thing that came close was the first year of the New York Washington Post magazine, where I did that series on the baseball team, the made-up baseball team. But that wasn't as much fun as this. This was great.
And I would say your series of columns from Lillehammer, which focused a lot on Tanya and Nancy.
Where I was writing
another
songs.
Gift from God.
Was another
gift from God.
I did the sports column that I wrote when I had the most fun. Was not about sports at all. Right. It was about life that day, just trying to be funny.
Did you ever think during the bandwagon or like at the culmination of the bandwagon, like, man, this must be the mountaintop? Like, this is, like, did you feel
well,
like...
Well, what I was aware of was that I had a privilege that nobody else had. But only because it worked. Only because the bosses loved it. And I sold it to them and they loved it. So... But I knew it was a great privilege.
It worked, and the Redskins kept winning.
They won all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were the best
they were
team
complicit.
By far. They lost two games by a total of 3 points.
Right.
They were great.
Yeah.
How does that taste, Michael, in your lifetime? They were great when you were like six.
Great memories.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's no bacon sandwich. You won't buy a painting.
Don't show me up each day on the show when we get to the songs on old guy radio.
I remember when you wore that coat in Norway, wrote a funny ballad. No. No drunken bandwagon rides.
Well, I can name that tune, and you can eat it when I'm right.
Well, I don't have a chance when you're hogging the mic.
Thank you, Kirsten.
You don't call me Nancy anymore.
This may be the most brilliant one we've ever had. It's Brad Weiss and Kirsten Ohnstadt.
Oh,
that may be it.
We played that before, but it's particularly appropriate
just
today, isn't
so
it?
So great.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank
All right,
you
let
both.
Me thank Maskey. and the Washington Post, and Jeff Ma, host of Bet the Process, our predictive genius, for coming on the show. Let me thank today's sponsors, Books and Sherry's Berries. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, leave us a review. I get to the end of the show. And I've talked so much. All right, this is,
you're like McNabb puking at the end of the Super Bowl.
This is Mike Porcelli, who writes, due to Michael's recent unfortunate legal circumstances, I'd like to offer my services as his replacement. I think I would make a great addition to the Shinebox team, as Michael and I share many of the same qualities. For example, my name is Mike, close enough. I have an infant son, doesn't like to be held by old orange men. My father pays my phone bill. And lastly, I will refuse to live in the little house, but will secretly use all its water. I look forward to eloquently discussing golf launch angles to the delight of all listeners. Sincerely, Replacement Michael. From Scott Turner in Reston, Virginia.
Give him a ring.
My friend and I are just two ordinary guys who struggled to light our tiki torches. So we bought an abandoned nuclear reactor in Chernobyl and started manufacturing atomic lighters using the radioactive waste. We were happy to hear that you're now the proud owner of one of our lighters. Please use the lighter safely, and note that you should see your family immediately if you gain the ability to read minds or suddenly grow extra body parts. From John in North Myrtle Beach, omitted from Monday's newscast about the zoo in Paris was a certain monkey among the orangutans. He had a ring of keys in one hand and in the other a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. From Champ Cox in Keller, Texas, while listening to Wednesday's podcast, I found myself entranced by Tory's State of the Apocalypse address, where she declared that the worst consequence of the impending apocalypse is the loss of all telecommunications, i.e. the loss of handheld interweb and social media access. I believe the sound I heard was a billion millennials gasping in horror, followed by Wilbon yelling, "Shut up." However, it is reassuring to know that everyone who kept their landline will be able to respond quickly to the next incoming intercontinental ballistic missile from Rocket Man by accessing their dial-up connection on AOL in order to find out what the next first world problem is. It's very smart. Nathan in Akeni, Iowa. Don't know it. 1. Deer can run. 2. Bears hibernate. 3. The moon is important. Unsure of these statements, I asked my third grade son, who in fact confirmed all three of these conjectures as fact. Big lead. From Peter Jennings. This is our Peter Jennings, right?
Yes, yeah. Not that Peter Jennings, but our Peter Jennings.
Enjoyed the discussion of peacocks and assorted menagerie on airplane stories. In 1998, I took a domestic flight on Garuda Airlines departing from Jakarta. Aside from the duct tape on the fuselage and the pilot wearing a World War II leather cap and goggles, the flight attendants were smoking clove cigarettes. Everyone was smoking. In fact, I was told I could sit anywhere as no one sat down during either takeoff or landing. There were live felines of some kind in the overhead bin above me, and a seat in front of me had some snakes in a container. There was some kind of chicken satay barbecue party going on in the front part of the plane. Garuda was ahead of its time, it seems. Junko was sending you a gift bag. The bling from Cape Kidnappers was too nice and expensive, so I kept it for myself. Instead, you will be receiving a virtual cornucopia of golf items, heading to Korea for the Olympics soon, and will be asking the Koreans if they remember an aging, orange, balding man who had trouble with the currency exchange and time zone issues from the Summer Olympics. We love Peter, who sends us ties.
Yes.
All the best from Nick Smith in Madison, Wisconsin. Today is the first birthday of my dog, Bootsy, no relation. She's pretty good with the sit and fetch, but we haven't gotten her up to calling long distance. So please consider this our call to you on her birthday. From Mike in Burke, Virginia. I heard Saliza say on Thursday that pendulum of opinion among the littles is swinging back in his favor. No, Chris. No. It's a wrecking ball, and it is swinging towards you. You hopeless prep school Malibu rum drinking, always wrong twit. So I guess where that goes. From Jacob in Kirkwood, Missouri. Should you ever decide to join Twitter, I would like to offer my services as a Twitter follower. As a non-robot, I feel I have a lot to offer. For a minimal salary, I will provide the following. I will follow you on Twitter. That's it. In return, you can provide me with the Bitcoin, or if that's unavailable, straight cash, homie. Thank you for consideration. Please remember to enter promo code Jacob for 20% off all retweets and likes. That was interesting to me yesterday, though.
Oh, sure.
Beyond me. I don't really understand it. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
He freaking genius!
Thank you, everybody, for coming.
home. I'll fill you in on all the places I've been. We'll cut the rock before I'm done. I've seen a face in every town I've been in. It will tonight. It's the south that I lie. I count the days.
My love don't.